correctly. We have two issues here. One is sources, and the other broadening our source base, and the other is greatly increasing the sorts of approaches that we use. And if I were to list some of the things that have to be done if we're going to understand and answer the sorts of questions that Jim has raised, we have to free ourselves from English. We are highly dependent in Washington on English language, even when we're studying China. And we have to free ourselves from sort of stale questions and school solutions. I find ever since I was on the Tlaeli Commission years ago looking at the CIA, there's a tremendous amount of continuity in the way things are analyzed, even though China is changing. We have to end mirror imaging. We have to understand that this is a culturally different place and that you will not automatically learn about it by inspecting the United States. The goal should be to build an understanding of the PLA and its place in Chinese society using Chinese sources, and in particular trying to get hold of the Chinese self-understanding. They have a very good understanding of how their system works, but it's expressed in Chinese. And Westerners often think, well, the Chinese are these sort of robotic repositories of facts, but we Westerners have got these wonderful theories, so we can make sense of them. The fact is the Chinese make very good sense of them themselves. And I very often have the experience of coming across a word that I may have read for 30 years and suddenly understanding what its real significance is within the Chinese scheme of thought, and that is a breakthrough. What sorts of sources are best? Books are the best source. That it's in books that we're going to find the answers to the questions about intent that Jim mentions. One reason is that books, for a variety of reasons, are the least controlled of all the media in China today. It's very, very hard to censor books. People are able to slip things into books that they can't slip in to newspapers, and I think the government feels that, you know, books are sort of that's those intellectuals, we don't have to worry about them. The books are not just books about military affairs. The Chinese use what might be called Aesopian language. They discuss the present by writing about ancient history. At the moment, there are soap operas, constant soap operas on Chinese TV. What are they about? They're about imperial succession and they're about official corruption. When? In the Qing Dynasty, which ended in 1912. But this is what everybody's watching. Now, do you think that the average Chinese doesn't understand that there's some overlap in the... Of course they understand. But it's okay to do it if you dress up in Qing costumes. Newspapers are worth reading, but we have to realize that the People's Daily scarcely circulates, that other papers of a very different character are what are read. I am often troubled that even this, the American version of the United Daily News, the World Journal, is not adequately exploited in the United States. I read it every day. But here is the local section. They have a local section for Washington, D.C. And if I were, for instance, trying to figure out what's going on in the Chinese community, I'd read it every day. But I don't know anybody who does that. Now, theory has been mentioned. Theory is very important, but the way I think of theory as a historian is that theories are, as one colleague said, they are a force multiplier. Indeed they are. Or they're a vision multiplier. I think theories are like flashlights. A good flashlight is one that lights things up. A bad flashlight leaves you in the dark. Studying something may require a variety of flashlights. And being a historian, I'm very promiscuous. I use any old flashlight. I'm not that will light the issue up. I don't get involved in political science debates. If we look at, I think the key question is military political culture. This is the thing that we understand least well. We constantly mirror image Chinese understandings of things like civil military relations, deterrence, political influence, psychological operations, the nature of victory and how it's attained, etc. We have not internalized an understanding of the radically different approach to these questions that's found in the Chinese literature on warfare. And in particular, I would say that the whole issue of deception, which is central to all Chinese strategic and military thought, because it is not central in Western thought, it is overlooked. We have to free ourselves from that. And one suggestion I would have, I'd like to see an attempt to formalize the Chinese logic of strategy rather in the way that people like Thomas Schelling and Kenneth Arrow and Bruce Bueno de Mesquita and others have created formal models of what they think of as being universal truths about strategy, but certainly are descriptions of Western understandings of war. Create games and simulations for training, for experimentation. As it were, create a deep blue that can play Chinese chess. I think that would be a very, very useful way of marrying the Chinese specialty to computer specialties. And if this were done successfully, it would make it possible for people who do not have Chinese language, nonetheless, to play against a computer program that would respond to some extent the way a Chinese strategist would.
I think I've got another 1 or 2 minutes.
Okay. I would like to see more study of the networks and elite structures within China, the military elite. Elite theory, elites turn into factions, and factions affect policies. We also have to pay attention to how Chinese society is changing. We have official choreographed change, such as we see in the Olympics, very, very different from what we would have seen 20 or 30 years ago. But we also have unofficial explosions, such as we saw on June 4th in 1989. This brings up a whole series of issues that range from literary interpretation, studies from anthropology, symbolism, and so forth, to the question of nationalism. How many times did we hear the word nationalism invoked during the Olympics? Well, the fact is that there are some great scholars like Ellie Kaduri, Walker Connor, Carl Deutsch, and others, but nobody has really gotten that right. The Chinese military itself is perhaps the most obscure group within Chinese society. And let me just give you, we don't really know what goes on. This is the only organization that has a grassroots base. The soldiers come from the villages. They don't come from the party academies. In April of 1999, the Falun Gong, this sort of Chinese Buddhist-type practice, surrounded Zhongnanhai, the political headquarters of the Communist Party, without any heads up to the leadership from the security police. One of the gentlemen they would have seen protesting was, in effect, a member of the an army general who is a member of the Chinese Joint Chiefs of Staff.
And that caused no end of agita, as I recall.
Well, that scared the living daylights out of them, but it should tell us that who knows what is really going on in the military.
On that point, we will have to save some of the other insights for the Q&A and turn to Bud.
Thank you very much.
The clock is ticking remorsely back there, and Nadia is looking at me.
No, but this beats telling